Yeah, I'm really excited to be bringing today's message, although it's been challenging in the preparation. And there's been times when I've been like, Lord, I don't want to bring it because I don't want to do it. But but that's okay. Just a little inside track. And you may be wishing, sorry, Cole, can I be a bit louder, please? So you can all hear me really loudly, really, really loudly. Oh, look, I'm being looked after very well. Thank you, Val. What a legend. Ladies and gentlemen, Val Collins. Yeah, so I was thinking, I don't want to bring it, I don't want to do it. And by the end, you might say, I wish you hadn't brought it, because I don't want to do it either. But let's go on a journey together for about half an hour, I suppose, and see what happens. As you've already heard a couple of times, we've just finished the B conference, and it's been really incredible for the few guys who are involved in serving who come along. We witnessed something that was amazing this year. It's easy to say it was the best one ever, but it was. And we actually were full to capacity, and that's an amazing thing to be happening. And I think there are only about 80 people from this church and 320 from elsewhere, which is amazing. And people are coming from all over the country, literally all over the country, and from different nations now, to come and to be fed at the B conference and have their lives changed. It was amazing. We saw salvations. We saw laughter breaking out. That was a funny one just before we're going to lead worship. Dancing breaking out, wonderful teaching. People were being healed. There was a line of people to be prayed for physical healing, and healing was breaking out in people's bodies. It was amazing, along with so much else, so much relating, and so many beautiful things happening. But one of the things that sort of encapsulates it all, I suppose, is freedom. A greater level of freedom was breaking out. And we've seen that in church recently too. We've been seeing people coming to the front and dancing. A few people, there were people at the B conference having a dance too. We've seen more of that. God is doing something. It isn't that it's being orchestrated and that we're trying to whip you up and get you into a frenzy. But God is doing something, and he's bringing about greater levels of freedom, not just in our worship together, but in our lives in general. And he's a God who wants to see us walk free from any prison that still holds us captive. And we can hear this message four times a year for the rest of our lives, and there'll still be areas of captivity that we haven't walked free from. So please don't switch off if you think, I already know Jesus, I'm not in captivity. I know Jesus, and I know I am in captivity too. But I'm gradually getting more and more free as time goes past. This message was birthed from a prayer time that we had just on the platform here about 8:30 last Sunday morning. Before we were rehearsing and getting our songs ready for the morning service, we have a prayer time every week. And while we were praying, I got this really clear picture that I'm going to share with you. Bit of suspense there. This picture, this is what I saw. I saw a bird in a cage. So it was quite an ornate bird cage. I can still see it. And there was a bird in there. I definitely know that the bird has its back to me, very interestingly. But the bird's in there on a perch, and it is singing to its master, who I can't see. It's beyond the cage, and I can't see that bit of the picture. I can just see the back of this bird cage with a bird. And it is singing for all it's worth. It's singing beautifully for its master. It is a lovely song. It's an incredible, rich, beautiful, diverse song that this bird is singing. Next to the bird cage, there is another bird that is not in a cage. It too is singing for its master that I can't see. It is flying around. We've got this book at home called about this butterfly, and so I would say it's doing a cherry dip flip. It's doing all sorts of things. It's looping the loop. It's having all sorts of fun. It's up and down and flying around. And it too is singing this beautiful song for its master. And I was looking at these two birds, and then I saw in the picture the bird in the cage looked out at the bird that was flying around and said, "You need to stop performing." And the bird on the outside said, "Don't confuse freedom with performance." Wow. And I was like, "Oh, that's an interesting little picture." And then came back in and shared it with people, and we prayed about it. And I believe in a very simple way that speaks to us in our worship, about how many of us express ourselves in different ways. And it's very easy to judge each other's worship. Yeah. It's actually very easy to judge it the other way too. To be the one who appears to be free and looks at others and say, you're in captivity. But you may not be in captivity. You may just express yourself differently. But God wants for everybody to come out of the cage. That's the important thing. Whatever your exuberant worship looks like, don't do it from inside the cage. Be free. But it's so easy for us to judge each other in so many different areas and have this position of sort of assumed superiority over other people, which sounds just like a Pharisee to me. I believe that God wants to set people free today. Really free in new and exciting ways. Not just in worship, but in life. So if you've ever been that bird singing for your master as beautifully as you can and seeing other people dancing around or doing things differently, and you've thought to yourself, oh, I don't like the way they do that. Why are they performing? They shouldn't be performing. Why is Al putting his guitar down over there, jumping up and down with a microphone? He should just stand there and lead worship and stop jumping around. Let's not confuse. He shouldn't, by the way. That's awesome. Let's not confuse performance with freedom, as it's so easy to do. And it got me thinking of a story in the Old Testament. Should have showed that slide a bit earlier. It's always the way. And okay. And it's a story of David dancing before the Lord in 2 Samuel chapter 6. If you have it, I have the words up here as I normally do. But read along if you'd like to. 2 Samuel chapter 6. There's quite a few slides. Now King David, oh, I need to set the scene really. So the ark, which signified the Lord's presence, had been captured by the Philistines. And the Philistines were rejoicing in having and finally captured this sort of this strong thing of Israel's. This was the thing that was gave them all their strength. This was the thing that gave them their victory. And this must be the story that sort of sparked off Indiana Jones with the Raiders of the Lost Ark, because the Philistines keep it, and some people look at it and look into it, and they die. Other people are getting plagues and boils and all things going on, and the Philistines are saying, we don't want it here, you have it. No, we don't want it. When we have it, we're cursed, you have it. And there's this curse going on all over the place until they decide, let's give it back. And it goes and it stays in a couple of houses of people, and then finally David is about David is now the king, and he's taken over Jerusalem, now it's called David's city of David, and he is bringing the ark back into Jerusalem. Okay, that's about where we are in the story. Now, King David was told, the Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom. That's one of the places the ark was staying, and everything he has because of the ark of God. So David went to bring up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. When those who were carrying the ark of the Lord had taken six steps, he sacrificed a bull and a fattened calf. I've heard that taught, and it could well be true, that every six steps he did that. Whether it was once or every six steps, that would have taken a while, wouldn't it? But either way, he was celebrating and he was doing everything he knew to honor God. When the people carrying it had taken six steps, he sacrificed a bull and a fattened calf. Wearing a linen ephod, David was dancing before the Lord with all his might, while he and all Israel were bringing up the ark of the Lord with shouts and the sounds of trumpets. As the ark of the Lord was entering the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul, also David's wife, doesn't say that, but that's David's wife. Michal, daughter of Saul, watched from a window. And when she saw King David, her husband, leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him in her heart. They brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place beside the tent that David had pitched for it. And David sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings before the Lord. A couple of verses later, when David returned home to bless his household, Michal, daughter of Saul, his wife, came out to meet him and said, how the king of Israel has distinguished himself today, going around half naked in full view of the slave girls of his servants as any vulgar fellow would. David said to Michal, it was before the Lord. And this is a bit where I think we can learn a lesson of how not to do it. This little bit that isn't needed in the middle. It was before the Lord who chose me rather than your father or anyone from his house when he appointed me ruler over the people Israel. I will celebrate before the Lord. I will become even more undignified than this, and I will be humiliated in my own eyes. But by these slave girls you spoke of, I will be held in honor. I think that actually is a way of not to do things. because he could have easily said, it was before the Lord. I will celebrate before the Lord. I'll become even more dignified than this. But he had a little dig. He's not perfect. He's David. Jesus wouldn't have had a dig. David did. But we can learn from that. But either way, Michael, his wife, despised. She was looking and she despised the way he did it. Now, I've heard about, you know, in this linen ephod, it might just be like a little loincloth. Actually, the ephod is the stuff that the priests wore. So he took off his kingly robes and he put on the priest's robes. And he was dancing as a priest before the king, ministering to God, giving everything he had. And there's no sort of evidence that he's sort of half naked. It's not like he's wearing a pinny and nothing else. He may have been. I don't see how it would have got his point of worship across any better. But people say that maybe the nakedness they're referring to is just giving too much of yourself. You're the king. You've just exposed yourself. It's that kind of exposing. Why would you expose such a vulnerable area of yourself to these servant women? Why have you made yourself naked in front of them like that? But you see, I love this story. David is so grateful to God. He is so full of thankfulness that he can't contain himself. He can't contain himself. He's dancing around, and the words used for dancing are like spinning and jumping and leaping, and it's not sort of just like a ding, ding, ding. Here comes the ark. Oh, sacrifice now, and off we go again. It's none of that. That isn't what's happening. He is exuberantly in and sweaty. He is dancing around. I will demo that maybe later. As will you. Maybe. 2 minutes before the end, that's when some people will be like, I just need a toilet break. I'll go and turn the coffee on. Anyway, so how do we respond when we are completely exuberantly like excited outside of church? Does it differ from how we do it in here? I know it does for me. I really know it does. I mean, when I'm watching like with Stu Alloway or something, we've watched the Euros here. That puts you under pressure now to be exuberant, doesn't it, Stu? But when we've watched like the Euros, sitting there, off, yeah, long break. Like when it looks like we're about to score, it's edge of the seat. Stu is like an edge of the seat person. If Chelsea, if there's a penalty happening, he goes on the edge of his seat. He's ready to jump. And his anticipation and excitement gets me excited. I can't just sit back. I'm like, oh, not with Chelsea, to be fair, but with England. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to jump up and down. And if England do score in any sort of tournament, we're jumping up and down and celebrating and hugging each other. It's so exciting. And then we're like, and look what Jesus died for us. We're like, yes, I'm so full of joy. Because we do often have a different response for the stuff that really doesn't matter compared to what Jesus has done, which really does. I remember when we were in France when they won the World Cup, not this last time, but I don't know. How long ago was that? Someone knows these dates. 98. These sorts of things are amazing. I don't know how old my family members are, but yet some people know who won different cups. What is that? How do they do that? But anyway, 98, we were in France, in a small village in France, and we were in this little cafe. I had the football on. Everyone was celebrating and partying. I tell you, we are not the French, but Allez le Bleu. I mean, it was amazing. We were singing as though we were French because these French people were changing the atmosphere, so we joined in. We were like, woo, atmosphere has been shifted. We are partying. And when they actually won, it was the best thing ever. People are running around celebrating. We're hugging people we didn't know. We ran into the streets. They're throwing fireworks. Health and safety, no. It's just like, this is a Catherine wheel. We light it. We throw it. Let's dance around it. Oh, my goodness. It was crazy. Then this guy got out from behind his counter. You wouldn't imagine it. This wasn't like the deep south. This was France. As in not the deep south of France, somewhere else. But he pulled out a gun from behind the counter. Like, oh. And he went into the street. He's like, boom, boom. He's shooting in the air. It was so much fun. It was brilliant. And that was exuberance. And those people in that place, they changed the atmosphere. Because when you're in a carnival, you feel like partying, don't you? I can't imagine going to Rio and being at the carnival and just looking like somber. We used to play this game when we were in Outcry. Mike Long introduced it to us. He used to get us to laugh, didn't he? We used to pretend to laugh, and then we had to do it with a really stern face, say, I can't even do it. You had to say, looking as serious as you could, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. But you're not allowed to make any like thing. So you'd laugh with each other for a while, then turn around and say, that is the funniest thing I've ever heard, but not allowed to let your mouth go. And we just couldn't do it. It was so hard to do. I don't know why he told you that story. But when you're in a carnival, you want to party. You don't want to look miserable like that. And when we hear about what Jesus has done, we should be partying, at least internally. And maybe we aren't exuberant dancers generally in life. But if there's anything you'd jump up and down for, or even punch the air for, I think we should do it for Jesus. That's what I'm challenged to do. To do it for him. David was free to worship. He was free from what others thought. He was free from his own insecurities. He was just free. Now, if in your worship, when you just want to express yourself to God, if you're in captivity because of what others think of you, Jesus wants to set you free today. If you're in captivity because of what you think of you, I used to go to, when I first went to a disco when I was 13, what I thought of me was everybody was looking at me. I mean, I'm sure we all go through this stuff. I'm not going to go on the dance floor. Everyone's looking at me. I don't even know what to do up there. It's so embarrassing. And when I go to almost any party now, the first 1 minute, I feel like that. I'm like, oh gosh, onto the dance floor. Yeah, let's do it. A minute in, I love it. Don't care. I'm just having a good time. But we have to sometimes force ourselves beyond that comfort zone thing to actually experience the freedom at those sorts of situations. Maybe today is a day to be set free in that way. You know, in the Old Testament, there's a few records of dancing. A few stories about where dancing happens. Miriam led the women in a victory dance once Pharaoh's men had been drowned. So Moses led the people in a song, quickly followed by Miriam leading the people, leading the women in a dance. At a festival in Shiloh, the women danced, and after David fought Goliath, the women danced. There's a theme here. The women danced. Okay? There is a time to mourn and there is a time to dance. But it doesn't just say that the women should be doing it. In fact, in Jeremiah, if I just jump forward quite a bit in my notes, you're going to find that actually, Val, you'll find that on the last page if you find that. Oh no, penultimate page, it says this. Jeremiah 31, talking about a future time, which I believe is here. They will come and shout for joy on the heights of Zion. They will rejoice in the bounty of the Lord, the grain, the new wine and the olive oil, the young of the flocks and herds. They will be like a well-watered garden and they will sorrow no more. Then young women will dance and be glad, young men and old as well. I will turn their mourning into gladness. I will give them comfort and joy instead of sorrow. This isn't something just for the ladies, but I tell you what, that's what we often see when it comes to freedom in worship. When we've had dancing in church, there have been some guys coming out, but generally, ladies, well done to the men for being brave enough. And again, look, this is not me saying, for you to express love to God, you must dance. Please don't hear that. This is me trying to say, if there's any sort of captivity that binds you from doing what you'd love to do, but don't feel you can, that's the stuff we want to get rid of. Those are the shackles we want to take off. That's the cage we want to get out of. We don't say, if you jump 10 times and do a star jump, then you love Jesus. If you don't, then you really don't. That is not the case. So please don't hear that. That's really important. So, as I just said, when David fought Goliath, very soon after, just a few verses afterwards in the Bible, the women danced when Saul, the then king, and David and Jonathan, that's Saul's son, when they marched with the army back into the city, the women were dancing. And I think that this is a really key story. So we know the story with David and Goliath, don't we, that the Israelites were standing there, the Philistines were standing on the other side of this great big valley of Elah, and there was this challenge coming. For those of you who may not know the story, there's a challenge coming from this fighter from the Philistines, this massive guy, Goliath, and the rule was if he would take on one person from the Israelites to save a load of bloodshed, whoever won that fight, that army had won the battle. So Goliath, this monster of a man, used to come forward and mock the Israelites and say, who's going to come and fight against me? No one would do it. This shepherd boy, David, comes with his sling, God on his side, powerful, bang, Goliath is defeated. Okay, Jonathan, Saul's son, he then befriends David like a brother. And these two become really close like brothers. And very soon afterwards, they're going back, and this is the story. By the way, the chronology of this first sentence confuses me a little bit, but that's okay. If it confuses you, go and look into it. Let's work it out together. Whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops and Saul's officers as well. Okay, Don't know if that should be exactly there. Probably should, but I don't get it yet. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, this seems to follow David and Goliath a bit more, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs and with timbrels and lyres. This sounds good so far. And they sang, "Saul has slain his thousands, David his tens of thousands." Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. "They've credited David with tens of thousands," he thought, "but me with only thousands. And what more can he get? Sorry, what more can he get but the kingdom?" Yes, he can get the kingdom, but that's later. And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. So big exaggeration going on in the song, but basically, David, you're our hero. You're at least 10 times better than Saul, is how Saul is here in that story. But it's an interesting one, I think, because Saul didn't dance, but David did. So if you compare the two stories we've looked at, in this story, there's a battle going on between the Israelites and the Philistines. And, you know, Goliath gets defeated. And this has been something that has been turmoil and so difficult for Saul. He's watching his whole army bottle it against Goliath, and he doesn't know who can fight this guy. It's been a nightmare. He's been seeking God over it. God sends David. David defeats Goliath. Saul should be rejoicing, because David was the answer to his prayers. He was the answer to his concerns and his troubles. But very quickly, that has shifted. That has shifted now, and he's jealous of the very gift that he needed in his team. He's jealous of the person who's come along to save the day, to that God has used in that way. You know, some of us have a mentality that doesn't celebrate all of God's victories, but has more concern over our own status. Churches do this. We need to make sure that we don't do it. That if we are believing for God to do an amazing work and pour his spirit out in Chelmsford, if a church down the road has 2,000 people in it, we shouldn't look at them and be jealous. We prayed for it. It's what we want. That's what we want. We want to see it here. But who cares where we see it? It doesn't matter. It's about having a kingdom mentality. If 2,000 people get saved, I don't care which church they go to, as long as they're discipled and they can make a difference and, you know, blah, blah. That stuff is, it celebrates kingdom victory rather than having personal, what about me in this? So rather than, and in Saul's story, rather than say, "There's been a kingdom victory. Let's celebrate God's goodness. This giant has fallen." Rather than that, he hears the words of these ladies singing and he's jealous. He's like, "David, what? They're celebrating David, not me. No one's celebrating God." And I see that as the problem in here. You see, Saul could have danced over the victory that God had given him. And I imagined a different picture. That Saul and David and Jonathan and the army are returning into the city, rejoicing because they'd beaten the enemy. Goliath had fallen. And King Saul was at the front and he was leading the dancing. He was dancing around just as crazily as David did later on when the ark came back to Jerusalem. And he was setting the atmosphere. And he was singing as to how good God is. And everyone was joining in. And when the ladies came out with their timbrels and their lyres to join the dance, they would have joined his lyrics. "God is amazing. Our God is incredible. Look at the victory he's given us. This is an amazing thing." But because Saul was silent and able to be bitter and jealous so quickly, the whole situation changed. And David and Saul's relationship never recovered from that. This was the beginning of the end. And the singing of the songs was David-focused and not God-focused. Rick and Bev used to teach us a lot about changing the atmosphere. Mentioned it already with being with Stuart at football, being in the World Cup. But they used to say to us, we need to come against a heaviness that may be around in the city, that was around in the city when we joined the church. So they would say, "We want you to lead with high praise. We want you to start the worship. Come on, from somewhere good. Don't come in with middle of the road, slow stuff. I'm so happy, but no one told my face. Don't sing that stuff. Yeah, it's good, but let's go a bit. more high octane. Let's get partying, not because we're performing, but because we are breaking something through. We are changing the atmosphere. Just like, you know, my favorite story with King Jehoshaphat, when the singers and the praisers went before the army, they changed the atmosphere. And it says in 2 Chronicles, as they began to sing, God set ambushes. As they worshipped, something else happened and something massive was released. Something was powerful. Everything changed because of the song. And we don't understand all of the intricacies of that and why that worked, but it happened and it's true. And we can change the atmosphere. That's what we're called to do. If we begin to celebrate God's goodness in our life, not just in here, but wherever we are, if we begin to celebrate God's goodness and call it out, it will begin to change the atmosphere around us. And we won't be people-focused. We can be God-focused with the things that we're saying and the praise that we're giving to people or the praise that we are giving out. David's dancing still offended, but he was purely focused on God. Okay? David's dancing in that first story, and so later on in the picture, David danced when the ark came back in, and that was offensive to people. But it was pure, and it was focused on God, and that was the most important thing. How easy it is for us to judge others from a position of superiority. To be like Michael, high and mighty, looking out of a window, down on a situation. That's, you know, this skylark thing, we nest on the ground. We don't nest in trees. We're not perched high and mighty, looking down and saying, look at the way they do that. Look at that. What a disgrace. They shouldn't be doing that. That is not our role. Our role is to be down with the people. Michael's role was to run out of the door, run and be with her husband and start celebrating God's victory. But instead, she perched herself in an ivory tower, looked down and despised what he was doing. This is not our role. This is not the role of this church, to despise what we see that we don't like, don't understand or don't agree with. But our role is to get down, go out and meet people and change the atmosphere. We've got to remember that, we say it regularly, our preference can become a prejudice. It's okay to have preferences in the way we worship in various things, but don't let it become a prejudice, because prejudice can become poisoned and blinkered. Remember Nikki's message a couple of weeks ago. Have a listen to it. About Peter, Cornelius, the vision that Peter had. I don't want to go into it now because time is ticking on. But it's important that what we believe, we understand, what we know, those preferences don't become prejudices in our lives. So when I looked at the bird in the cage and I looked at Michael looking out of the window, both of those things stunk of religion to me. They felt like religious things. And so I started to look at the Pharisees. Maybe I'll do this on another occasion, because I said I'd speak for about half an hour. And I'll just tell you a few bits now, okay? Oh, I'll press a few slides as well. Always the way. Come on now. A few things about the Pharisees. The Pharisees were the religious elite who were passionate about keeping the intricacies of the law. The written law, the oral law, 600 Levitical laws that they tried to keep absolute, you know, dot the I's, cross the T's. We were going to keep everything exactly right, exactly as we want it. And I think it's important to say that they're not bad guys. They're not all bad guys. Nicodemus in John's Gospel wasn't a baddie. Gamaliel in Acts wasn't a baddie. So these were people who were just, they were trying to keep the law. And they felt that was the best thing to do. But as a general rule, the Pharisees were the people group who caused, who clashed the most with Jesus' actions and his teachings. They were the ones who always had problems with what Jesus was doing and always confronted him about it. And here's an interesting thought. I've spent a lot of my life thinking I'm glad I'm not like the Pharisees. Oh, there's a Bible story just like that, isn't there? I'm glad I'm not like them. Come on. I'm glad I'm not a Pharisee because they're the baddies and I'm one of the goodies. Picture Jesus talking to the Pharisees. Where do you stand in the crowd? I did this when I was writing this. Where am I in the crowd? I'm always next to Jesus. He's like, look at the Pharisees. What are you guys? You know, you guys, you brood of vipers, you're doing this, you're doing that. They're always over there. I'm never standing in the middle of it. I'm not one of the Pharisees looking at Jesus and his disciples. I'm always next to Jesus. And that itself makes me a bit like a Pharisee. having some kind of assumed position of superiority over other people. Assumed. Just won't say it. But I think that it's really important that we realise that when Jesus talks to the Pharisees about some of these religious attitudes, he's not talking to another people group. He's talking to you. He's talking to me. Because we can carry this stuff so easily in us. And I had a look at Jesus' interactions with the Pharisees, and I just want to pick out, briefly, don't panic, this is not the start of my three-point sermon. Three quick interactions that Jesus had with the Pharisees in Matthew 23. And it's interesting as well that it's preceded by Jesus saying this of the Pharisees, listen and follow what they teach. It's interesting, isn't it? But don't do what they do. Listen and follow what they teach, but don't do what they do. That's high praise, isn't it, from Jesus? That's about integrity. That's about being able to walk the talk. It was funny recently when we were in Orkney, I was just sharing with the men. I was doing a men's breakfast, just trying to get the vision across for the network and talking a bit about me. And just I was giving them some examples about being brave and stepping out. And in the end, this guy just stopped me. And he said, can you just give me some examples in your life when you've done this? Yeah, okay. So I gave a few examples and we went off talking about different things, and the whole atmosphere kind of changed in the room from this time of teaching to a point of sharing, and it was amazing what happened. And afterwards he came over and I was like, good question. He's like, well, you know, it's very important to me that I follow somebody who walks the talk and doesn't just talk the talk. So I just needed to think, oh, enough teaching. Just I want to know whether you actually do this or whether you know how to teach. There's enough words. I was like, wow. And when I said, you know, that's good. I mean, I'm glad it put me on the spot, but it's okay to be put on the spot. It was good, and it was about integrity, about do we live out what we say? And that's what Jesus would first of all say to all of us when it comes to this. People, he may say of me, hey, people over there, do what, you know, listen and follow what Pete says, but don't do what he does. That would be a tragic thing. Don't do what he does. Don't behave like he does. And he would say this, definitely. Don't behave like Pete does in that situation. Do not get as ratty as he does in that situation. Do not become a Pharisee of every other driver who doesn't know how to do it as well as me. Don't, whatever it happens to be, there are so many ways in which I sit with the Pharisees. But Jesus says of them, listen and follow what they teach, but don't do what they do. And then there's these things. He says to them, great sorrow awaits you religious scholars and you Pharisees, such frauds and pretenders. You do all you can to keep people from experiencing the reality of the kingdom realm. Not only do you refuse to enter in, but you also forbid anyone else from entering in too. And this one just speaks to me of the Pharisees. They shut the door on people being able to have relationship with God. They weigh people down with burdens and rules and the appearance of holiness instead of holiness itself. And people had to conform and behave before they could belong. May we never be a church where we expect people to conform and behave before they can find that this is their family. Jesus says to us, come as you are. And we can easily say to people, change and then come and join us. Jesus says to people on the edge, come to me, I'm having dinner at your house. And we can say, it's lovely to see you, why don't you go and have dinner at theirs? Jesus says, come to me and be free. And we don't need to get in the way of that. In a changing world, he's calling everybody. And we shouldn't be judging anybody from assumed positions of superiority and shutting the door on them being able to get into a relationship with Jesus. Let's not do that. Second, see, I told you they wouldn't be too long. Great sorrow awaits you religious scholars and Pharisees, frauds and pretenders. You're obsessed with the peripheral issues, like insisting on paying meticulous tithes on the smallest herbs that you grow in your gardens. These matters are fine. In other versions it says, that's good. It's good to tithe. But you ignore the most important duty of all, to walk in the love of God, to display mercy to others, and to live with integrity. Readjust your values and place the first things first. What blind guides, you're nitpickers. You spoon out a gnat from your drink, and yet at the same time, you've gulped down a camel without realizing it. Jesus is cool, isn't he? I love the way he says stuff. And this poor little girl, she's overwhelmed by the nitty-gritty, the finest details, and she can't see the big picture at all in that. We don't want to get so tied down with the small stuff that we forget the big stuff. And I thought for us as a challenge, that would be serving. That's the one that jumped out to me. Serving God rather than loving him. Rather than showing mercy to people, walking with humility, showing justice to the world who need justice. I would do justice, but I'm a bit busy because I'm on another rota. It's not what we're supposed to do. By the way, some people are on four rotas and lots of people aren't on one, so we need to sort of adjust that a bit. Everybody can do something. But it's important that we don't get so bogged down by this picture here. Oh my goodness, I've got another rota, I've got another job to do, another thing. I do love you, God, but I'm a bit busy doing all this stuff serving you. We are children in the family of God. We are not servants. And so we need to adjust that. It's good to do these things, just like it was good to tithe as Jesus was talking to the Pharisees. But don't forget the big picture stuff. Final one, just to quickly grab out. Great sorrow awaits you, religious scholars and Pharisees, frauds and imposters. You are like one who will only wipe clean the outside of a cup or bowl, leaving the inside filthy. Sounds like my mother-in-law. Only with the washing up, babe. Every time Sue does the washing up. Every time Sue does the washing up. She just like she never has her glasses on. She can't see what she's doing. True, she rinses it under cold water and puts it on the draining board. And then I come behind and I take the coffee and tea stains out of it and wipe the lipstick off because there are some things that I just think are important. So anyway, so Mum Sue, you are not a Pharisee. If ever you listen to this, you are wonderful, but you're not the best at washing up. Oh, just keep going. Okay, so. You wipe that, you don't do that. You're foolish to ignore the greed and self-indulgence that live like germs within you. Sorry. Right, this is a line I love from Jesus, okay? Let's focus. You need to have more than clean dishes, you need clean hearts. Yay, that's a good line, Jesus. Like that. So this is the one where he goes on to whitewash tombs. And, you know, we've got those cupboards and drawers in the house. People are coming over we weren't expecting. That's the cupboard. That's the room. Throw it all in there. We'll deal with it later. We're not supposed to have those rooms in our hearts. We know that. Let's not give a superficial appearance of holiness. We don't want to do that as a church. It's just a reminder. Let's continue to be real with each other. Let's not hide our sins away. Let's not do that. Let's talk openly. Let's be accountable. Let's move on and in discipleship together and be genuine. If your color is like a muddy white, then wear muddy white. Don't come to church in white and then go home and live another life. Let's be integrous people. We can learn that. You know, David, after he'd danced, he wrote the book of Psalms. And he wrote things like this. He didn't write the book, he wrote the Psalms. You turned my wailing into dancing. You removed my sackcloth and clothed me with joy. He was able to write, you turned this into dancing. In Psalm 149, he said, let them praise his name with dancing and make music to him with the timbrel and the harp. And there's this brilliant quotation from C.S. Lewis. The most valuable thing the Psalms do for me is to express the same delight in God which made David dance. It's beautiful, isn't it? Because we want to be people who are free. The Pharisees weren't free. They loved God. They did the best they could from what they understood, but they didn't live in freedom, and they stopped other people being free. That bird in a cage was free. Michael looking down on David, the bird in the cage wasn't free. Michael looking down, she wasn't free either. Saul was all bound up. But David shows us, in his actions when he danced and in his writings, the sort of freedom that Christ came to give us, where it says in Galatians 5, it was for freedom that Christ has set us free. We need to live in that place of freedom. And as we've said, in the past few weeks, we've seen spontaneous joy and dancing starting to erupt in the life of the church. And God is doing something new. It's an outward expression of something that's going on in you. Okay? It isn't forced and it isn't fake. I was a massive Pharisee, as you know. If you've heard my story, you know I was a Pharisee when it came to worship. You know, some of you, that my hands were for holding the pew in front of me or the Baptist hymn book. That is how I grew up. When I saw people raise their hands, it offended the life out of me. Stop drawing attention to yourself. Why are you doing that? It's not about you, it's about God. When I met Nikki and she sang harmony in church, what are you doing singing harmonies? That is a disgrace. God is not interested in your harmonies. He just wants you to sing the normal tune. It's not about you bringing attention. I was like it all the time. And I went to Spring Harvest one time with my mum and her friend Pauline, and I saw people jumping up and down and dancing with whistles. You know the story, some of you. And I was so offended by it. And then I realized I wasn't offended by it. I was gutted that I couldn't do any of it. I was so bound up. So I said in a scared manner to my mum and to Pauline, I'm like, could you pray for me, please? Because I need to be free. I can't worship like that. I can't do what they're doing. And they're like, yeah, we'd love to. And they prayed for me. And then the next night, I was down the front with a whistle, jumping up and down. I remember one time at Extol, we were here at a worship group, formerly known as Extol. We were here at worship group, and we were just having a worship evening. And God said to me, worship with dancing. So I'm like, oh, Lord, that's hard. Worship with dancing. Jumping's an easy, it's a nice start, isn't it? But I was like, worship with dancing, what do you mean? He's like, go and get a flag. I'm like, flag? I'm anti-flags. I'm kind of anti-flags. I've been in enough conferences and things where I'm standing there worshiping and suddenly one's draped over me. I'm like, oh, what just happened? And it's not a football match. So, you know, I've been at that, and so flags worry me that, you know, eyes could come out, all sorts of dangerous things. But anyway, I went and got a flag on that occasion, and I danced for all I was worth, and it freed me up. And so if you see me jumping around up here, down there, wherever it is, it's not because that's always come easily to me. It doesn't. But it's just something I've practiced. And it's really important that we learn to be free together.